Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Craig Ruffalo, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle, and today is December 10th, 2019, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Today, I am pleasurably excited to have one of the best analysts in all of the world, Nicole Thomas from Hotlanta. How are we doing, Nicole?
Hey, Craig. How you doing, man?
Man, we are doing well today.
Is it warm out there?
You know, I'm not telling you. Okay, yeah, so is it above 40 degrees?
It is above 40. Yes.
Okay.
It's not Chicago cold. But it's Atlanta cold.
No, that's not good. Yeah. You know, we finally got rid of our storms through here. We finally got our rain, and boy, did we get some. But we're trending around the high 50s today. Yeah, it's a balmy 58. What do you say? You can get away with a sweater like I'm wearing today, and we're all good.
Humidity.
It's funny. Today is not Friday, and that's when we normally hear these wonderful voices in the oratory commentary of McKinney Flavelle's analysts. But today is a Tuesday. Now, why would we be on a Tuesday, Nicole?
Why would we be on a Tuesday other than if the USDA released some numbers for the WASDE report?
Unbelievable. We have what we in the acronym world call a report for the ages, the WASDE report, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. If you can say that faster than that, God bless you. But here we are. We are staring at what everybody was anticipating as something that was going to be mindful and meaningful as far as the agricultural community when it came to the grains markets. Did it happen? We were anticipating potentially lower production because of lower acreage in the corn market. We might have seen some offsets in demand. What happened? Did the corn market actually move today?
You know what? Today was probably the most uneventful WASDE we have had since we started worrying about
with all that setup. That's what I got. It was uneventful.
I'm sorry. Hey, that is our reality today, Craig. Look, take it as a gift before Christmas.
There you go.
You can go to Christmas not concerned about what the actual production number is for corn. That's a gift.
So I don't have to ask for extra corn kernels in my stocking this
year. Yellow dent number two corn for you. Just some coal.
Okay, well,
we know you deserve
right.
it.
That is true. You just ask my wife. She'll cop to that.
Yeah, I helped her find it.
So what happened? So you're basically saying it was a snoozer, but was there any change at all in the balance sheet?
Well, you know what? Nothing in the way of changes for the 2019-20 domestic numbers.
Okay.
Production came in where it's been at about 13.6 billion bushels, almost 13.7. That's down by about 760 million bushels or 5% from last year, what we've been saying. You know, most of the corn crop is harvested, but a few spots still have a way to go. Wisconsin is at about 74%. That leaves about 738,000 acres to be harvested. Michigan also at 74%, in their case, leaves them with about a little under 450,000 acres left to harvest. But you know what? North Dakota is the one that everybody's kind of giving some extra scrutiny right now. They still have about 1.8 million acres to harvest, or at least as of the crop progress report survey that was released yesterday.
So if you're using that yield that they had, Nicole, and you're talking, if I just heard you right, nearly 2 million acres yet to be harvested, what kind of production number does that mean it's still on the ground potentially?
Well, you know, the thing is, when it comes to corn, you can harvest pretty late. You can harvest even after some snows hit the ground. So it's hard to say just what this means. And because we've gone through this entire planting season, overestimating what the damage could be. Let's not throw out numbers that are too hasty right now. So if I wanted to be conservative about it, maybe we're talking, you know, 10, 15, 20 million bushels, something of that sort, that in the grand scheme of things
not as much of
make
an
that
impact.
big of an impact on things, right? I think what will be more interesting as we move along is to take a look at what's going to happen with demand. Now, in today's report, USDA did not touch demand.
Okay,
left everything unchanged.
They kept that neutral and unchanged as well. All right.
They kept that unchanged. But if you're looking at some of these regularly reported numbers, you might be scratching your head about a few categories. Ethanol, obviously, still lagging last year's pace. If we were looking at the first 2 months of this crop year, the usage is down by about 7.5% versus last year at that point. So we could see some numbers or some number adjusting taking place in that category eventually. The other category that we could see a downward revision for ultimately is exports. You know, the cumulative shipments lagged last year's pace by about 57% at this point.
That's not a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's on the cumulative shipment side. So, you know, but when you're looking at that line, trying to reach that dot at the end of the crop year, there's still a little ways to go. Conversely, yeah, it seems unlikely at this point. Let's put it that way. Now, conversely, on the demand side thing, one category that we could see revised higher would be the feed category. Now,
so how is the livestock going with that? I mean, that must be because our numbers are healthy on livestock. Yeah,
exactly. There's thus far looks to be growing. There's certainly expectation of growth in export demand that would continue to support that. So all in all, we would expect that number to at least be somewhat comparable to the 18-19 number, around 5.6 billion bushels. Today, we have that projected at 5.275 billion. That would be about a little, call it 300 million bushels below where we were in 18-19. Or about 6% down, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, that doesn't.
When you think about so much less in the way potentially of usage for exports, meaning there will probably be lower DDG production ultimately, which means we'll probably see more corn usage for feed. So ultimately, more changes to come. That's why I say accept this December report. Just take this peaceful moment of serenity and enjoy it when it comes to that.
Because that's not the case in everything that we're dealing with in the world of commodities. I mean, we're going to hit on here the soybean complex real quick because it dovetails right into the same comments that you're making for corn. But tell me that the fact is that it's probably had a little more volatility than the corn market simply because everybody's up and down and all around about the U.S. China trade agreement, and that we're close to phase one, and we're not. We're going to put on duties here on the 15th. We're not. We've got all this soybeans that we're not supposed to be shipping, but yet we're shipping. This stuff is crazy that we're doing here. But yet, what happened to the balance sheet by USDA? Anything exciting in that, Mark?
Nothing there as well. So,
so there you go.
At least for 1920 for the major category. So,
all right.
Soybeans,
so basically,
we're still looking at 475 million bushels of ending stocks, about half of what we had at the end of 2018-19, all other things being equal. Exports, USDA still being pretty conservative there, which I wouldn't question them on that. Considering all those things you just mentioned and that we're still waiting to get some ink on the paper saying that we've got a trade deal. And at the end of last month, the U.S. had exported about 6.58 million metric tons. Now, that's up considerably from last year when we only did about 350,000 metric tons at this point. But that is still only a little more than a third of sort of that area where we were averaging prior to this whole trade dispute, where we would easily do somewhere around 15 or a little more than 15 million metric tons in that time frame. So from a bean standpoint, again, erring on the side of patience in terms of making any changes to that sheet.
Yeah. It seems like on the international front, Nicole, sorry about that. I wanted to get for your comments here is Brazil and Argentina, you know, as we're getting into the harvest period here, or completing harvest, they're obviously getting into the planting season as the inverse crop years that South America crops get. How are we doing? It sounded like at one time we had some worry about dryness down in Brazil and Argentina, but I don't know if that's been alleviated. Are we looking at a competitive South American crop for exports moving forward as we get it out of our harvest and into our planting season and into their harvest? What do you think?
Well, I think so. We have seen a reduction in production expectation for a couple of the crops. Okay. Most notably, you're talking about Argentina. Brazil is killing.
They'll be the competitive.
The weather's been pretty good. Nothing that, you know, would alarm anybody as far as that's concerned right now anyway. So it looks like they're still going to be a competitor with us. They shipped well into the season that we would usually be picking up a little bit of that demand.
Right.
And depending on when they get things harvested, that could take the sort of the tail end off of some of our demand. And that is if we don't have something on paper indicating that there will be more export demand, most notably from China, to offset some of that. So at least for now, things seem to be reasonably quiet there as far as that's concerned. Okay. And I'll make a quick comment about soybean oil. Now, there was one change to the soybean oil balance sheet that was interesting.
Oh, all right. There we go. Now we got something going. Here we go.
Now we got something. We got a little something. Right. Well, we've got foreshadow.
Bubble it up. All right.
We've got foreshadow for what's to come, potentially.
Ooh, okay.
So the change is on the 18-19 numbers, and it is in the biodiesel category. That number was reduced down. So soybean oil usage for biodiesel for 18-19 revised lower to 7.863 billion pounds. Now, why is that important? Look at the 1920 number, and the early projection anyway is 8.5 billion pounds of usage. That's a significant increase year on year, or at least an expectation of such. If you're looking at some of these monthly numbers comparatively to last year, they're about flat, some months a little lower, some months a little higher, but all in all, relatively flat. So it begs the question as to whether or not we will be able to see that sort of ramp up for usage in the 1920 year. And on top of that, in a scenario where soybean oil prices are going to be stronger, are stronger than where they were last year at this point. So something to keep an eye on as the months progress.
And it sounded like that there might be some residual commentary on that same bullish price roll on palm oil. Because it sounds like as soybean oil prices is going up, I had seen somewhere and I'd read probably something you wrote that was talking about the palm oil market going up and up and up and maybe somewhere close to 10 or 12 year highs. So there's not a real offset for any appreciation or bullish trend on soybean oil. Am I reading that right?
Well, reasonably so. It looks like the two, now you can make the argument of which one's leading which one on any given trading day, but you're right. There's been a sharp increase to prices for palm oil. A lot of that due to declines in production over in Southeast Asia, most notably Malaysia's come down a bit. They are seeing somewhat stronger export demand, but nothing that's really major. But that reduction in production and ultimately the fact that stocks are down a little lower than where they were last year are both supportive factors for prices, expecting them to continue to try to offset some of that lost demand in the EU with demand out of India and China, which on top of everything else, you know, China crushing a little less in soybeans, a little less demand for soybean meal because of what's going on with African swine fever. And as a result of that, needing to pull in more imports of edible oils, including palm oil. So those factors are definitely adding some support to prices. And you're right, on a cents per pound basis, we're probably up a good 4 or 5 cents in just a few weeks.
That's a pretty significant increase in just a short period of time. And you know, it's funny that you can combine this whole podcast and conversation surrounding the commodities. When we said there was very little going on in the grains complex, we would say that that is not the case in the world of sugar. And talking about reduction in supply, you know, the U.S. beet and cane production has been reduced almost 1 million tons in 2 months. Wow. It's crazy. It is
It is.
absolutely crazy. It is one in a career type of scenario that I can remember, even despite what we had with Katrina and Wilma, or what we had in 2000, and I think it was 11 or 2009. I can't remember the actual date with Imperial's explosion. It was a single entity. This is a massive reduction. And of course, where are we looking for the imports to come from is our friends in Mexico. And look at what they did. This morning, the U.S. Department of Agriculture decided that we needed an additional 700 and plus thousand metric tons. They gave it all to Mexico, 100%.
Wow.
So 100% of our import requirements. Now, to get to that 13.5% stocks to use ratio come Sep 30 of next year is going to come from our friends from the south. Now, here's the curveball, Nicole. You tell me what you read when you saw the Department of Commerce notification through the Federal Register this morning stating that they are going to formally abandon the 2017 amended suspension rules.
Yeah.
So where does that leave us? In your interpretation, because I have my own ideas, but in your interpretation, when you read that, what does that tell you? How is this 1,800,000 tons going to cross the border, and how's it going to get defined? I think our readers and our listeners are definitely going to be interested in our take on this.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, considering that ultimately that would leave us open to a little more refined sugar, wouldn't it? Shrink the raw sugar import quota a little bit there. It's interesting that here we are so far past where all this stuff seemed to be settled, that we are standing here now looking at a different scenario, and in the midst of a situation where it looks like Mexico's production is going to come down a little bit, right? Isn't that the expectation here?
Yeah, the last numbers they wrote was about a 600,000 metric ton or a 660,000 metric ton reduction year over year in their crop size. Now, of course, they haven't really started into production. That won't really commence until January, when the cane starts really flooding into the mills. But generally speaking, what you have now is you have a bunch of rules that were written post the countervailing duty and anti-dumping case that were required through to try to get supply, which was then what we created was the suspension rules. That was in 2015. They got amended because people in the sugar industry said this didn't do enough to keep us from having injury. So they wrote the amended rules, and now we don't have those anymore. I think we've just thrown the identification of physical border crossing of sugar into complete turmoil. My term, not the industry term, it's turmoil, because if you're at customs and you're trying to identify a box car full of sugar or a vessel full of sugar, what does it qualify under? Does it qualify as raw sugar? Does it qualify as refined sugar? What price point? We're into a little bit of a flux here, and frankly, we're going to need the physical supply come January. So I think that this is one of the major takeaways that I saw today's report, because you didn't just have the WASDE numbers come out that were by themselves enough to fill a day's worth of conversation, but you throw on top of it this Department of Commerce abandonment. Oh, and then by the way, Nicole, I don't know if you saw this, because it's going to impact the grains markets, probably corn more than anything, is the ratification of the USMCA. We are having an agreement signed in principle by all three countries. It sounds like the House of Representatives will now pass this version of the USMCA, and it will already have been passed by the Senate. So here we go. We've got a new trade deal that's going to replace NAFTA. Now, that's got to have some
impact. Wait a minute.
Impact.
Didn't something come out this afternoon that Mr. McConnell says he's not going to deal with that right now, right?
Well, you never know. I mean, obviously, that's the identification is that they said this morning that we're going to have an official, quote unquote, ceremonial signing. People were already on airplanes headed down to Mexico City, but you still have to get it ratified by Congress. And there's the rub. I wanted to make sure you brought that up, too. This is
I caught a news flash about that. Looks like Mr. McConnell says he's going to hold off until post impeachment proceeding. So actually see that on a piece of paper here soon.
It sounds like it
makes it interesting.
I'll tell you, if we could just get politicians out of this stuff, it would make things much more easy in our world, although maybe less fun.
I got one more sugar question for you, Craig.
Right,
as it relates to all this stuff going on, what about the latest out of Brazil? Some of the reports as far as their production is concerned, you think that'll have an impact?
Well, I think as far as the number 11 market, I believe that that's exactly what's going on. You're finally finding people switch from a net short to a long position, which they normally should have already with the thought process of in between a 7 and 10 million ton production deficit to consumption. And it's not just Brazil. It's also the Indians claiming that they're going to lose 8 to 10 million tons of sugar. But the Brazilians have made it perfectly clear that you can't make money at 12 and 13 cents a pound on exports. It's below their cost of production for sugar. So to replace that cane and making sugar is not going to be where it's at. They're going to lose money. And now you see a mill saying we're going to go up to 60-65% of the cane that we're going to deliver to ethanol. Why? Because it at least makes some money. And if the government's supporting us with the blend ratios, we've got an offset for it. So I think that that's probably what we're going to see moving forward until we end up having the next round of production scheduled for the following year, the 2021-2022 crop. If that becomes a growth pattern for production, it probably will help bring the number 11 back down. But my suspicion is we're going to double down and you're going to have another wheat crop. And you could see world prices upwards of 16 and a half cents on the number 11 in the not too distant future. Just a prediction.
Yeah, sure. Do not disagree. I mean, when they say that they're, you know, for the center south region being the major producer, that their second half November was about 36% down from the year prior. That to me says that we're starting to, you know, we've been talking about deficits for a while, but it sounds like we're seeing that really come to the fruition and the market finally realized that that's happening. The curious thing will be what happens with that currency longer term as well. Because we have seen some decoupling of late, which has been the first for a while. These two have been trading reasonably concertedly for a while. So to see them start to decouple a bit, along with, again, some of that political rhetoric as it relates to
darn politics showing back up again.
Hey, who knows what we're going to get here in the coming months?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll bet those that are listening today will have a lot of questions post this podcast. So rather than gab about it some more, let's wrap this one up and let them get on the phones and talk with us and get their specific questions answered. So if you have questions, please get a hold of us. This is a lot to ingest in one day. There's a lot going on in the world of commodities. It's why you guys got to call McKinney Flavelle. You got to listen to these podcasts. You got to register for webinars. It's a fantastic opportunity for you not only to learn for yourself, but then help to communicate it to your team and your leadership when they're asking questions that, you know, generally they don't know a lot about. So, hey, Nicole, thank you very much for everything that you're doing for us.
Thanks,
and
Craig.
Helping everybody out. Have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. And like Mike says, our fearless leader always reminds you to have an attitude of gratitude. Be loving with the ones that you're around. Give everybody a hug this year. They could use it. Until the next time, don't forget to check out our website. And if you have the chance to pick up the phone, let's talk about our spring seminar in April. We'll give you an invite.
See you later, folks.
Take care, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Flavelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Flavelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.